blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains, just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Women and children alike, murdered and massacred night after night. While the so-called leaders of countries afar debated on who's wrong or right. But their powerless words were in vain, and the bombs fell down like acid rain. Through the tears and the blood and the pain, you could still hear that voice through the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go tonight.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, or by going to our website at thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to our shows as well as our past shows on our iPod Ready archive section. Excuse me, that's a tongue twister. And that's thepeoplespeakradio.net. If you have Nokia phones, you can also listen live via satellite. Just go to the website and they'll tell you there how to do that. Greta Berlin is our guest tonight. First of all, I said it to her and I say it publicly to everyone, how proud we are as Americans and as Palestinians to have a woman like you on our side, Greta. You've been an advocate for justice for the Palestinians since the early 60s. Greta is the mother of two Palestinian-American children whose father was born and raised in Safed, Palestine, and is a 1948 refugee. She has a master's degree in theater and a bachelor's in English, and when she's not working with the Palestinians, she spent the past 32 years teaching engineers and scientists how to design and deliver presentations. Again, thank you, and as a Palestinian American, for the brave work that you do, Greta, and it is brave indeed. You've had your experiences there. I don't know where to start, Greta. There's just so much. First of all, can you tell us a little bit about what you have been doing recently?
Certainly. And first of all, I wanted to say thank you so much for asking me to be on, because this is the way we get the messages out, and this is the way we are able to make sure that people hear us. I've been actually doing this, as you said, for almost 40 years. I do see a sea change in the United States. I do see people beginning to recognize that the Palestinians are the victims of the victims, and that there's something that we have to do about that. So about 2.5 years ago, there were a group of about five of us who said, look, we have to figure out a way of getting into Gaza. Gaza was essentially closed. There has to be a better way. So somebody in Australia wrote to us and said, well, why not take a boat? And four of us looked at each other and said, yeah, well, why not take a boat? We spent 2 years buying these two small fishing boats and taking 44 people in August of 2008. And we actually got there. We were astounded that we got there. And that was the beginning of this whole entire thing of trying to break the blockade of Gaza.
And when you went the second time on that infamous boat, the Dignity, can you tell us a little bit about that trip and how it started and what your thoughts were when you were heading towards what is now a devastated war zone?
Well, it was interesting because when we went in August, we had these two small fishing boats called the Free Gaza and the Liberty. And we realized after we came back from Gaza and went back to Cyprus that there was no way that we were going to be able to take those two boats back. Certainly, we were not going to be able to take them back in the winter. So our exploits, of course, were broadcast throughout the Arab world. Al Jazeera was absolutely fantastic at covering us. And we had a whole group of donors that stepped up and said, look, you need a better boat. And they raised enough money, and they raised the money for a boat that we call the Dignity. It's actually a yacht. And we bought this yacht, and in fact, many of us who are longtime activists looked at this yacht and we said, gee, do you really think it's okay to be on a yacht? And one of the Palestinians that was working with us said, well, why not? Of course we need to take a yacht to Gaza. We've taken two fishing boats, now let's take a yacht. We bought that
yacht. You're upgrading.
We're upgrading it, absolutely. You know, we're looking for a large, huge cruiser, a cruiser at one time, or even a cargo ship. And so we bought it. Between October and December, we ran four more trips. And every one of those trips got in successfully. We took Arab parliamentarians. We took Marid Maguire, who was a Nobel Peace Prize winner in 1976 from Ireland. We took people to bear witness to what was happening in Gaza. One thing I do want people to understand is we are not a humanitarian organization. We're a human rights organization. We take humanitarian supplies because we can, but they're tiny, tiny amounts. We are chartered to take people into Gaza to bear witness to what Israel does to the people of Gaza. That's
what
we are chartered to do.
And let me ask you, what is it that Israel does to the people of Palestine?
Personally, Israel's busy committing genocide against the Palestinians of Gaza. I'm tired of pussyfooting around with the words of saying, well, it's ethnic cleansing. Well, it isn't as bad as other times. I call it slow motion genocide. What they do is they keep it under the radar. They are starving the Palestinians to death. Actually, what they're trying to do is starve them into submission. When that doesn't work, then they do what they've done over the last 23 days, and that's to try to bomb them into submission. So when we went in August, and I was on that first boat, what we saw in August was infrastructure that was destroyed, sewage systems that weren't functioning, power plant that was only half working, schools that had partially bombed out wings to the school, hospitals that were overburdened, and medical supplies that were seldom getting in. In August, the Palestinians were still able to get food, but they were getting food in through the tunnels. You know, at one time there were 700 tunnels that went between Egypt and Gaza because it was the only way they could get any supplies in.
Exactly. Exactly. Let me ask you, you know, here, for those of you that don't know, some of the death tolls in Gaza are over 1,300. Almost 6,000 people have been injured. Around half of the dead are women, children, and elderly. Gaza residents claim that not a building has been left undamaged, and the city's streets have been destroyed by bulldozed by Israeli troops. Israeli forces have also attacked the Red Crescent Hospital, setting it on fire. Israel said they launched the military offensive on December 27th as part of an all-out war against the Hamas movement and to stop rocket attacks from Gaza in Israel's southern towns. 13 Israelis and 3 civilians and 10 soldiers have died during this 21-day offensive. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon called the number of dead and injured in Gaza unbearable during a meeting with the foreign minister. How is this, as a human rights activist, Greta, how is all this possible and still happening after 60 years?
You know, it's even hard for me. It's hard for me to even talk about it because when we were there, the people of Gaza had become my friends, and there's not a person that I know in Gaza that hasn't suffered for this. This is not a war. I know Israel says this is a war against Hamas. This is a massacre. This is a Holocaust. There isn't any other way of calling it other than what it is. Israel takes all of the munitions that they have that are supplied by us as Americans, and they have dumped them on top of a Palestinian civilian population. So as somebody who is involved in human rights, I am so outraged and also so appalled for two reasons. Number one, that it's happening, and number two, that we Americans pay for it. I have pictures of munitions that have landed into the front rooms of people's homes, and on the front of the munition it says, made in the USA. We're responsible for this. We have to stop it. We Americans have to say, no more, not in our name and not with our money. Because we are responsible, ultimately, we are responsible for this massacre.
Greta, tonight is the inauguration of Barack Hussein Obama. During his inauguration speech, and I didn't catch it all just because of my work day, but what I did catch was that his position is, as he spoke to the Muslim world, is that they were going to build upon mutual interests and a more peaceful relationship. Do you think that that is going to happen under Barack Hussein Obama?
Well, I would like to hope so. I certainly voted for him. I certainly have hopes that he will change the way the United States is running. But I do have to say that the very first person that he appointed into his cabinet is an Israeli. Rahm Emanuel is an Israeli. He served in the Israeli military in the early 90s. His father was a terrorist, was part of the Stern Gang. I hold out not a great deal of hope that there's an awful lot that he can do. I always hope that somewhere along the line, Americans are going to understand that this has been a 60-year horror for the Palestinians, that they have paid the price for what Europe did to the Jews, and they are now the victims of those very same people. Do I think it's going to change? You know, I'm an incurable optimist. If I weren't an optimist, I would never have been one of the co-founders of the Free Gaza Movement. I never would have said we're going to go by boat. So I hope.
Let me ask you, you are a victim of Israeli brutality, were you not, Greta?
I was. I went to the occupied West Bank in 2003, 2005, and 2007. That's how I got started. And I went in part because of what happened to Rachel Corrie. I had been writing for years about Palestine and what was happening. And when Rachel Corrie was murdered, I said, you know what, I can't just write. I have to go. So I went in 2003 to Jenin, and Jenin was just recovering from the massacres there. And they were just beginning to build the walls around all the cities on the West Bank. So I went with the International Solidarity Movement, and we went out one day to tear down a gate in front of this horrible, they say it's a fence, but the fence is 15 feet high with a 3-foot high razor wire on top of it. It's not a fence, it's a wall. So as we were standing there with big bolt cutters trying to cut the fence down, the Israelis started to fire on us. There were 7 of us that were hurt that day. And I got hit in the leg. But I also have to say that I was hit in the leg with a rubber-coated steel bullet. They hit us to wound us. After they murdered Rachel Corrie and Tom Herndl, I think the Israeli government figured, you know what, it's probably not a good idea to kill the internationals. Didn't stop them from killing the Palestinians, but we'll just wound the internationals, so maybe they won't come back. So every one of us that day was shot in the leg. I consider that my badge of honor that I stood there no matter what happened, and I was determined I was going to hold on to that segment of the gate. I was bleeding down the side of my leg, and they kept saying to me, hold on to the gate, hold on to the gate. Okay, okay, I'll hold on to the gate. And it didn't even occur to me until afterwards that I had been wounded.
And again, when you and the ISM and the Free Gaza movement rode the Dignity on a mission of mercy into Gaza, at this point, I mean, obviously the human rights issue is beyond recognition. So just getting them any kind of supplies is just a human rights issue. Can you tell us of that day on the boat when Israel attacked the Dignity?
Well, when I went in August, I was on one of the first two boats. And when I went in August, what happened is they wanted to have a group of us who had been organizers of this particular project to then stay in Cyprus and to run the boats out of Cyprus. So between August and the last two boats that went, I was actually organizing those boats in Cyprus. I was not on board the boat. I was organizing the passengers, getting things ready, and making sure the humanitarian supplies got on board. So there were a group of anywhere from 3 to 5 of us who were busy sending the boats out of Cyprus. The Dignity went out on the 29th of December, which was 2 days after the Israelis started to bomb the people of Gaza. And since we had gone 5 times already and not been stopped, we decided we were going to go this time and we were going to challenge Israel. What ended up happening is in the middle of the night on the 30th of December, the Israeli boat, the Israeli warships, rammed us 3 times. Cynthia McKinney was on board that boat. They went to the starboard side, the right side of the boat, and they flashed their big floodlights on the boat. So that what happened is that all passengers went to the right-hand side to see what was happening. As they went on the right-hand side, the Israeli warships rammed us 3 times in the side. They tried to sink us the way they tried to sink the USS Liberty. They were really hoping that they were going to be able to sink us, either let us drown or use their story by saying, oh, the Dignity ran into our warship and we rescued the passengers. I honestly think that that's what they thought was going to happen. The Dignity didn't sink, thanks to the captain.
You know,
it should have, by the way.
Probably, yeah, absolutely, after being rammed 3 times. The Israeli government statement is that it was an accident.
Yeah. Well, the Israeli government lies and has lied for 60 years. It's very hard to figure out how it could have been an accident when they rammed into our side 3 times. So it was an accident 3 times. It's so clearly deliberate. We've had the boat towed into Lebanon, and it's now back in Cyprus. It's being pulled out of the waters in Cyprus right now. We intend to file suit against the Israeli government. We've got one attorney who actually wants us to file suit for attempted murder. We are definitely going to sue the Israeli government for the damages, which are right now around 100,000 euros. We have enough passengers on board. And as somebody said to me, who are you going to believe? Are you going to believe the passengers on board, or are you going to believe the Israeli Navy? The passengers
on board. Was any of it videoed?
Really
Was any of it videoed, Greta?
It wasn't. It wasn't videoed, and the reason that it wasn't videoed is because they were very clever. When they turned their spotlights on the right side of the boat, what happened is everybody came over to the right side, and so people were either videoing the boats on the right-hand side, or in the case of CNN, CNN was doing an interview on board the boat. From what I understand, you can actually hear the boat crunch in the background as far as background noise. But by the time they rammed the boat, it was too late to get to the other side and to videotape it. But I think we have, I think there were 16 people on board. We have 16 people's testimony. It's all exactly the same, including, by the way, the reporter from CNN. From what I understand, CNN asked the reporter to change his story and to go along with the Israeli story, and he said no. He wasn't going to do that because it was a lie.
Wow. Unbelievable. Do we have a caller on the line for Greta?
You've got Cynthia McKinney on the line.
Hallelujah.
Hi,
Cynthia. Hello, sister. How are you?
Hi, Greta. How are you?
I'm fine. I have to tell you, the Houston Martin Luther King Day Parade, and I'm in Houston working, they dedicated the parade to you. Just so you know, I didn't know if you knew that.
Oh, no, I did not know that.
I am clapping here, Cynthia. You deserve every bit of that honor.
Oh, that's wonderful. If you've got the names of organizers, please email it to me so I can say thank you to them.
Okay, I will. They had great big posters of you. You were absolutely gorgeous. And in the bottom of the poster, they had the picture of the damage to the dignity.
Oh, how beautiful.
I can get that for you.
Yes, it's just amazing that we're all on the boat and we're stunned by this aggressive action by the Israelis. And I hear Carl Penhall, who is the CNN reporter, arguing with his editors or whoever it is at CNN headquarters that no, that's not the story. That's not what happened. CNN wanted to run with the Israeli disinformation rather than the story, than the eyewitness testimony of their own reporter.
For those of you
who don't know who
is on the line, Cynthia McKinney, former congresswoman and Green Party candidate for president, is on the line with us. Cynthia was also on the boat, the Dignity, that was rammed, and the two of them were taking medical supplies and doctors. And it was rammed by the Israeli Navy. And Cynthia, thank you for doing what you do, the good work that you and Greta do. As a Palestinian American, I am honored to know both of you. And I can't tell you how much it means to all of us to help renew our faith as Palestinian Americans in the goodness of humanity. I said this to Greta, and I'm saying it to you, and again, thank you. Ladies, Cynthia, when you talk about the fact that they didn't even want to believe their own reporter, how what did he say afterwards?
Well, he commended me for telling the truth, and you know, sort of gave me a thumbs up, like, you know, it's going to be all right because I'm going to stick with the truth. But the amazing thing is this is such a commentary on the state of the press in the United States. And here I come back from Lebanon where the discussion is nothing but the horrific scenes that are coming out of Gaza. And guess what's on television at the airport when I arrive in the United States? A woman having electrolysis to have hair removed from her face. And it's just like one person was saying to me today that U.S. media are full of noise. And it's this noise that prevents people from doing rational, critical analysis of their own circumstances. And we get absorbed in the noise, and so we never think.
You know, I always call the media here, I've absolutely resorted to calling it no more than slapstick comedy media. It's just amazing and it's stunning. And because I do have satellite and I do get foreign television out of the UK, out of Al Jazeera, out of the Middle East, out of Pakistan, I am just, first of all, I would like to thank anybody in the world that is listening, that Palestinians know what the people have done. Millions of people around the world have stood up and screamed at the top of their lungs, stop the massacre. And we will, and given enough time, the problem is the United States government is not stopping the massacre, and Israel is not stopping the massacre. Yes, they've withdrawn, but only after they've completely subdued. Can I ask you something, ladies? This is a personal impression that I had. First of all, this is not unusual for Israel, and I think, Greta, you will know this with your history with dealing with the Israelis. This is not unusual that they took advantage of the November 5th win of the Obama election in order to break the ceasefire and incite the responses by Hamas in order to go in there. And I think they used the impotency of both presidencies during this period of time, the outgoing Bush and the yet-to-be-in Obama, to take advantage of that 1 month period where they could do literally whatever they wanted. And I think, and this is for me, I think that when they decided to withdraw 1 day before the Obama inauguration, it was no more than a game that they're playing to not create an image of impotency in our presidency by defying the Obama administration right off the bat. Do you ladies agree with me?
Yes. I think Israel is very deliberate. One thing, no matter how angry you can get over Israel and the fact that I consider it a genocidal country, they're very clever. They're very manipulative. They know exactly what they're doing. They pay a great deal of money for high-priced PR people that can go out and spin the story and spin the story, so that's the story that Americans get. On November 4th, they go out and break the ceasefire just before our elections, and then they suddenly stop this massacre just before Obama is inaugurated. If Americans are so dumb that they can't see through this, I'm really disappointed. I don't think that we are dumb, by the way. I think we're ignorant. We are not dumb. I think when Americans find out what happened, I think we're outraged.
I think we're, well, I don't know. I'm starting to get worried. But, yes, you're right. There has been a movement, Greta. But Allison Weir's site, If Americans Knew, was based specifically on the idea that if Americans knew, they would do different. But have we done different? Yes, we have learned on the basis of our activists and the people, but our government is not changing its policies in Israel or in the Middle East, and that's of great concern. I think that right now that the Middle East is a powder keg, and I think we have a very short, small window of opportunity in order to salvage this and bring some sanity back into the picture, and I'm just praying that President Obama can do this.
Cynthia,
well, one thing that I would like to add, that no matter what the Israelis say, the fact of the matter is that they lost. Israel has been defeated again. Israel was defeated by a people who don't even have an army. And so here the world's fourth most powerful military may not have wanted to make the incoming president look impotent, but they certainly failed to achieve their objectives. and the valiant resistance of the people of Gaza in face of this tremendous military might reminds me really of the Vietnam struggle in our own country, where this Tet offensive, which really set the unraveling of the U.S. military machine in action. And I think that's what Gaza has done, and the whole world now has had their eyes awakened or opened, except here in the United States, where we didn't get to see the images that the rest of the world saw. But even in the United States, there were these spontaneous demonstrations and protests against what Israel was doing. So
yes,
for the first
I agree
time
with you.
In my entire political career, people are talking about Israel. People mm-hmm. are talking about Palestine. And this creates space now for us to have a substantive policy discussion. And what I have said publicly and asked the Congress and President, and now President Obama, to not send one more dime, not one more bomb to Israel.
Well, I'll tell you, I agree with both positions, and I certainly agree that there's more room for some kind of, as I said, sanity to return to the region. We have a lot of questions here. Unfortunately, we're not going to be taking any phone calls tonight because we are expecting another special caller hopefully soon, and I'll keep that one as a surprise. Dennis in Orlando asks, my question to Cynthia is in two parts. One, are you going to run for the House again? Two, what do you think of the possibility of having a committee in the House holding hearings on Gaza, Israel, and U.S. support for Israel?
The Congress has several standing committees that such a discussion would come under their jurisdiction. For example, the Armed Services Committee in both the House and the Senate could have such a discussion. The International Relations Committee in the House, the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate could have such a discussion. You could have a joint meeting of both of those committees so that you would have the House and Senate actually receiving testimony and deliberating together, it's something that has been done before. You have the House Government Oversight Committee. So there are several committees where this issue would be pertinent. But
are you going to run for the House again?
Let's put it this way. I'm looking at every possibility, and what I came to, the conclusion I came to, which is, I think, a revisitation of the conclusion that I reached earlier, and that is, if they work so hard to kick me out, there must be utility for people who think like us to have me in.
Absolutely. I told her to come run in California.
We do have another question from Jeanette from Michigan. The invasion is over, but do you think the world will finally force Israel to lift the blockade of Gaza?
Not as long as the United States won't. The entire world, the United Nations has voted 65. You know, there have been 65 resolutions against Israel. They've been blocked every single time by the United States. It's not a matter of changing the opinion of the world. There were a million people who marched in Spain against Israel. There have been at least five countries who are telling Israel to get out of their country and to close their consulate. You've got Qatar, who had relationships with Israel, who is now telling Israel to close its office in Qatar. You have to get this to happen in the United States before anything is going to happen. Because we
agree, and the most important thing is that we have to realize that we've got to elect different people to office. And so I guess that's where the importance of the previous question comes in, that if we only have 5 members of the House who can look at U.S. policy rationally and 0 members in the Senate who can, it's clear then that we've got to have, I've made some T-shirts up that say Dignity, a Movement for Peace and Justice.
Yeah.
We've got to have a pro-peace, pro-human rights, pro-justice, pro-American interest lobby in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill.
And yet, we at this point, we just hear that a nuclear shield has been approved by the United States as to be gifted to Israel. I guess I can't think of any other word but to say it's a gift to them. Everything that we give them is this gift, and that's a frightening prospect. What are the intentions of the Israeli government? Do they intend on nuclear war? Is this small strip of land worth that kind of devastation and destruction?
Yes, and the reason that it's worth that kind of death and destruction is because there is 4.3 trillion cubic feet of natural gas under the waters of Gaza. People have to realize that this is not about ethnicity. It's not even about religion. It's about stealing somebody else's natural resources. Gaza has the largest gas fields in the Eastern Mediterranean. Tony Blair, bless his little heart, is busy trying to negotiate a deal between British Gas and Israel. What for? For the gas of Gaza. This is about natural resources. It's always been about stealing natural resources. I think it's about putting a white colony in the middle of a brown nation, just the way South Africa once was, so that you can take as many natural resources from the indigenous population and keep it for yourself. And I think that's what the United States underwrites. And I think that's exactly what's happening, because everybody says that. Why is Gaza worth anything? Look at these poor, starving 1.5 million Palestinians. What have they got? They have 2 things. They have a wonderful beachfront, and they have 4.3 trillion cubic meters of natural gas.
Which could take them to the, which is the only thing that could possibly, under the circumstances and the way Israel has divided Gaza and the West Bank, which would be the only thing that would actually sustain a Palestinian state.
That's right.
The key.
It would be a mini Singapore. They have enough money for a mini Singapore. They have a beautiful beachfront. Israel is busy stealing that natural gas as we speak. They're already taking it. And it's time that we started seeing what the real reasons for this is. And that is one of the reasons Israel doesn't care, couldn't care less about the 1.5 million Palestinians. They like them all wiped away.
Well, you know, one of the other things that I had heard at one time, this was probably 4 or 5 years ago, I had read in an incredible geological article, Greta and Cynthia, and what they had said was that because of the way that the oceans had somehow concentrated the soils beneath Palestine, that it had left it with an incredible richness of minerals, to the point that if they ever started to actually excavate them, that they would be filthy rich there. You know, there's so much there. Because I could never believe that it was just about the land. First of all, the rabbinical court system and the Knesset don't even agree on why they're
right
there. And that's why they've never been able to solidify any of their constitutions, because the rabbinical court would just go crazy on them. And I thought to myself, what is it that's drawing them there? What is this incredible, and this gas thing is just a plus as far, and you know, when did it come about? We just found gas in Gaza. Oh yeah, you just found it.
1999. Very interestingly, by the way, if you want to really read the entire story, you can just Google natural gas in Gaza and you'll get the entire story. But the British Gas and the Palestinian Authority made an agreement back in 1999, which fell through because they wanted to sell the gas to Egypt, and Israel insisted that the gas had to be sold to them at a discount. When the deal fell through, suddenly there's the Second Intifada. Is that the only reason? Of course not. There's always multiple reasons for genocide. There's never just one reason why a country does something to another country. But people have to start understanding the practicalities of why this is happening. And it's because of the water that Israel has stolen, the olive trees, the land, and now the natural energy sources. Israel has stolen all of that. It never got it legitimately. I don't even think it got it legitimately in 1948.
Well, the pipeline, the water pipeline, after shortly after its unbelievable attack on Lebanon. Cynthia, when you were in Lebanon, did you have an opportunity to see the devastation there and what took place?
Well, I did not get a chance to visit the South, but I can tell you that I did get a chance to see the destruction in Beirut itself. And buildings are pockmarked with mortar holes, and some buildings, some lots are vacant, and so you know, it's very clear that there was a lot of destruction and death in Lebanon at the hands of the Israelis.
Well, you know, we have a little surprise for both of you ladies. There has been an incredible song circulating on the internet, and we have with us our caller. His name is Michael Hart. Michael is a Los Angeles musician who's worked with Brandy, Will Smith, Toto, Natalie Cole, The Temptations, Phil Collins, Patti LaBelle, The Pointer Sisters, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Ricky Lee Jones, Lou Rawls, Jesse McCartney, Hilary Duff, and many others. His song, We Will Not Go Down, has literally just taken a life of its own. Michael, welcome to our show. It is an honor having you, and I want to thank you as a Palestinian-American for an incredible song.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm really glad to be on your program. Thank you.
And we have, ladies, this is a little surprise, and I'm glad that you all got to share this with us.
Well, I'm very glad to be here. Basically, I just got the chance to listen to the last 5 or 10 minutes of your program. I found the show on the internet, and it sounds really, really interesting. And I thought I'd give you guys a call.
Oh, wonderful,
Michael. What inspired you to write this song?
Well, basically, it was just observing, you know, the horrible things that have been happening in Gaza, just like everybody else has been, and I had to do a little bit of more research on the internet and find some more accurate information, because being that I live in Los Angeles, as I heard you speaking earlier, that the media is really limits what they show. So I had to do a little more research, and you know, the information and the photos that I found were absolutely heartbreaking, and I just got something in me. Just I had an acoustic guitar laying around like I usually do, being that I'm a songwriter. And within an hour or two of just, you know, strumming around, I came up with this song. It just sort of went through me. It wasn't planned or anything. It was just an emotional outlet for me. And I slept on it and then woke up the next day and decided that it was worth recording. And literally within that evening, I had already made arrangements to post it on YouTube. And the response has been really, really overwhelming, as you might have noticed.
Well, it's a very powerful song, and it has brought me to tears. I know that I got it from my own family on the internet through my email.
Yes, and, well, it has been spread around the internet at an incredible rate. It basically spread like wildfire, not only by email, but on a lot of blogs and posts, mm-hmm. and forums and so on and so forth. And I think people just went a little overboard, just really spreading it around and sharing it with their friends and people who were interested in the subject. And before we knew it, within less than 2 weeks, the YouTube video that I put up got over 500,000 views.
You now have 616,000 people who have looked at it. I have it right in front of me.
Yeah, and that's the original video that I put up, but I think there was an additional 100 or so videos that popped up where people use my song and basically place their own videos and their own images on top of that. So it's really been amazing.
It's been fantastic. I also saw it. I can't watch it. I can't watch. It's just. I think it's wonderful. By the way, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It is really powerful, and it's obviously difficult to watch and not be moved by these photos and listening to these stories. I think it makes a pretty powerful and very honest and very direct and unapologetic statement about what's really going on over there. And it's just a shame that a lot of people in America don't even know what's really going on over there. So I really hope the song gets around as much as possible.
Well, we certainly are doing our part to spread it, Michael. I know it's in many areas of Palestine, and As I told Greta and Cynthia McKinney, Greta Berlin and Cynthia McKinney, for those of you that have just joined us, we have former Congressman, woman, and Green Party president candidate Cynthia McKinney, Greta Berlin, who is the founder of FreeGaza.org, a humanitarian group that has not only been in the West Bank and Gaza, but suffered under the hands of the Israelis themselves, and Michael Hart, who has written a song called We Will Not Go Down. You can get it on YouTube if you haven't heard it. It is an incredible song, and I want to thank all of you. You've just been, I can't even begin to tell you what your words and what the idea that Americans would sacrifice their lives in Palestine. It's not that we don't, and Greta, you can verify this. It isn't that we hate Americans. It's we hate what Americans are supporting.
That's correct.
What is happening there, and when they hear an American or when they see an American that's written a song or gone there to stand side by side in solidarity, or a congresswoman that has stood up and gone to these places and witnessed the tragedy, it is so moving to them. Because many times we feel like we've been forgotten, and I want to thank you. You know, Greta, we have a question from an old friend of yours. I guess we've just got a lot of people in your life coming out here, Greta. And it says, "Hi, Greta. This is Angela, who worked with you and Riyadh on the Greta Berlin Scholarship for PCWF, the Olympics for Sanaa. I want to let you know that even though I've been keeping a low profile after Hurricane Katrina, I'm as involved as I can be right now and have been following you and your projects periodically. I even suggested that someone from the Free Gaza Project be invited on this program, and I keep the Free Gaza website address in the message next to my name almost continually. I just wanted to give you a little feedback regarding one aspect of the Free Gaza aspect, and then ask you the following question. I know you take students and others from Gaza so that they can finally get to the places that they need to go and receive the services they need. But there is a whole other level beneath that where people who have visas and others in progress can't reach anyone to be processed one way or the other. Are there any plans to deal with this issue by the Free Gaza Project? Thank you."
The answer is yes, and the answer also is yes, we've been doing this all along. On the 5 trips that were successful before the boat that Cynthia was on got rammed, we took students out, we took families out for reunification,
And we took several people out who couldn't get any kind of medical care in Israel. Israel and Egypt refused to let them in. They do have to have a legitimate visa, and we do have to work with the government of Cyprus. But the government of Cyprus has been wonderful. They have been wonderful at helping us and making sure that we abide by all the rules. If they have what is called a Schengen visa, which is a visa to any European country or to the United States, we can, in fact, help them. But we can take such a small amount out. These are not big boats. Ask Cynthia how big the Dignity is. How many people did you have on the Dignity, Cynthia?
Gosh, I don't know the exact number. 15 or 16 is what
okay.
I've heard.
Yeah. So if you can only take 15 or 16 in, and some people are staying, some of our activists are staying, the most we can ever do is take 3 to 4 to 5. I think the most we ever brought back out were 8 students. So it's a drop in the bucket, but it is an attempt to try to tell the Palestinians that we're not just going in there because we're trying to advocate their human rights. We're actually trying to do some practical hands-on help, as small as that is.
I have a question for Molly in London in the UK. I'm not sure if I understand it, though, Ali. I hope I get this right. Does Israel continue to build illegal settlements in Gaza? And if so, the big security wall, does it shrink? I'm not sure, Ali, what you meant by that, but I didn't want to miss your question. Ladies, maybe you can figure something out with that. I'm not sure what he means by does it shrink.
There are no illegal settlements in Gaza. Israel unilaterally withdrew their 6,000 settlers out of Gaza, and then they just simply locked the gates. There is a 40-foot wall all the way around Gaza. You cannot get in, you cannot get out. And one of the reasons we went by sea was because that was the only avenue that was even remotely open to the people of Gaza. What they actually did is they pulled their settlers out. They took the key, they locked it up, and they turned it into an outdoor prison. That's what it is.
Unbelievable. We have a couple of questions for Michael. Actually, we have one question that I'd like to ask. Kate in Australia asks, is Michael married and would he like to meet me? No, this isn't a dating service, but I thought I'd pass it on, Michael.
No, I'm not married, actually, and I would love to meet anybody who would love to meet me. It might be a little difficult all the way in Australia, but I appreciate the request. Thank you.
Well, there you go, Kate. There you go. Dennis from Orlando has a question for you, Michael. He's asking, have you thought about getting other singers to record your song in a We Are the World kind of production?
Well, I haven't thought about it yet because the song literally is 2 weeks old. I wrote it 2 weeks ago. It wasn't something that was planned, like I explained earlier. It just happened. So I've been overwhelmed with thousands of emails from all over the world, most of which are, you know, really overwhelming from the Palestinians and people who support the cause. But some of them have been from musicians and producers who want to do different versions of the song. I just haven't had the chance to even entertain that idea yet. The song is still brand new. And I'm currently working on multiple ways to get the song across even further. So that's the status right now.
Well, again, it's an incredible song. And for those of you that haven't seen it, I suggest you go to YouTube and pick it up. It's just brilliant. There's a few statements in... oh, my gosh, I guess I lost my question here. Where did it go? There are some statements that you have that, as far as upholding the understanding of why Free Gaza was formed, Greta, can you elaborate a little bit on that for us?
Well, I mean, initially we did form it as a human rights organization. And we had said our mission was to go in and break the blockade. We had no illusions that somehow we were going to get rid of Israel's occupation of Gaza. Israel still occupies Gaza. It's obvious that they could come in at will. We wanted to make a statement that Israel, in fact, was still occupying Gaza, and that we were going to break that blockade. And we said this is what our major mission was. And that is exactly what we ended up doing, and not just one time, but we certainly did it five times. And, you know, the last boat that we sent, which was just about 4 or 5 days ago, was also turned back. The Israeli Navy turned our boat back and said that if we didn't go back, that they would shoot us all.
I have to tell you, when Tzvi Livni stood on television and made the statements that they were working side by side and hand in hand with humanitarian relief efforts to get these people in there and help the Gazians, I almost went through the television screen.
I think that people need to recognize that the Palestinians do not need humanitarian aid or a handout from the world. They are having to do that now because they don't have their human rights. They don't have their civil rights. Palestinians are very entrepreneurial. They're very bright. They're well-educated. They need to have their civil rights just exactly the way the African-Americans needed to have their civil rights in the United States. Once you get your civil rights, you don't need humanitarian aid. You're perfectly capable of taking care of yourself. And people need to understand that if the Palestinians can't have their civil rights, then all they're going to end up getting is, as Tipsy Livni, whatever her name is, says, we sent in 37 trucks. By the way, they need 700 trucks a day to feed 1.5 million people. If they had their civil rights and they were able to have their own society and be able to attract business, they don't need handouts.
You know, it's interesting to know that Livni's father was a member of one of the largest terror organizations
Israel. Right.
And he was also directly involved, with the bombing of the King David Hotel. And if Livni becomes Prime Minister of Israel, she will be literally the first Prime Minister that can go anywhere in the world without being arrested for war crimes. Now, I think that says a lot. I think that says a lot. We've got a couple more questions that I'd like to get in real quickly. We're running short on time. Rez from California. My question is, you stated that the U.S. should close the Israeli embassy to alienate Israel in order to pressure them into lifting the blockade on Gaza. What responsibility do you think Hamas has to respect international law? How do you think they should be held responsible if they violate it? And in parentheses, this question is optional. How would you describe the state of human rights in Gaza under Hamas leadership?
I'm not sure where he got the idea, but did anybody say that we thought that Israel should close its embassy in the United States?
I don't recall that myself.
What I did say is that other countries are kicking Israel. Are kicking Israeli,
yeah, that's right. I think he may have misunderstood that. That was the Turkish government.
Right. Well, no, and then the Venezuelan government has kicked them out. There have been about, from what I understand, there have been 8 or 9 now who have told the Israeli attaches to get out. But I'm always kind of bemused when people say, well, what about Hamas? Well, first of all, Hamas was elected, democratically elected, by one of the safest and most regulated elections in the Middle East that Carter oversaw. It is a political group. It has a military arm. That military arm is a defensive arm, not an offensive one. It is there to protect people from Israel's occupation. I don't approve of anybody killing any kind of civilians, but why don't we look at how many civilians Israel kills first, and then let's take up the banner about whether Hamas does or doesn't do what it should do as a government. It hasn't been allowed to govern. If it were allowed to govern, which it was trying to do, then we can have a discussion.
I think also we should discuss the fact that embodied in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is also the idea of the right to not be occupied. And if occupation exists, then there is a right to resist. So this is all wound up in the right of self-determination of the Palestinian people. If they vote for Hamas, then Hamas should be recognized. And if they vote for Hezbollah in Lebanon, then Hezbollah should be recognized. If we didn't even vote for George W. Bush, and we ended up with him.
Oh, he's gone. I'm so happy.
Absolutely wonderful.
You know, I'm in Texas, by the way, right now, and one of my clients said to me today is, well, Texas is going to get its village idiot back today. And I thought that was perfect.
You know, we're almost out of time, and I would like, as we end, if all three of you could give me 1 minute on what your thoughts on how this is going to proceed from here, good, bad, or indifferent, what are your thoughts? Michael, how do you feel about the situation in Gaza and Palestine?
Well, it's obviously the situation has been going on for a really long time, far longer than most people here care to remember. I think it'd be a little unrealistic to believe that just because, you know, the Israelis pulled out, that's it, you know. It saddens me, especially here in the U.S., to know that, you know, what's happening in Gaza is pretty much going to disappear from the headlines, from the news headlines, and people have a short memory here. And also the fact that we had a new president, you know, sworn in today doesn't help matters much either. So I think that the best we can hope for, at least from my point of view, is to at least raise awareness and change people's minds, especially in America, about what's really happening over there, and just get them to question the source of the news as they get it, because I really think a lot of people are really misinformed. So that's my hope, really.
Cynthia, your thoughts, please.
I would just say that, you know, we have to remain hopeful that we will be able to achieve the kind of world that fits in with our values. And it's not going to be easy, but we have to struggle nonetheless for a more peaceful world that is just.
Well, I hope you're right. And Greta, what are your thoughts on Palestine? You've been there enough. You know the people. You have befriended us, and we thank you. What are your thoughts?
You know, I'm an incurable optimist. I wouldn't be doing this if I weren't. I've been working with the Palestinians for 4 years. My children are now grown and gone as Palestinians. They think I'm completely crazy and say, please don't do this on our account, Mom. And I said, it's not. It's about, as Cynthia said, justice. We are going to get another boat ready. We intend to send another boat back to Gaza. We can do what we can do. I'm going to let Cynthia know when it goes back so we can see if she can come back with us. And we are not going to stop this. We are not going to let Gaza fall out of the news. It may fall off the front pages, but until this is resolved, there is no justice anywhere.
Well, I want to thank all three of you for being with us, especially Michael, who surprised us, and good luck with your song, Michael. Greta, you make me proud. You really do. And Cynthia, you know, please run again. Don't give up.
Yes.
We need people like you. God, we need people that speak out. You know, when I listened to some of your speeches in the past, and the way you called the shots as they were, and the way Greta calls the shots as they are, I think to myself, oh, my God, there is truth still alive in the world, in the arena of politics. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us tonight. Next week's guest is Ali Abu Nama, founder of the ElectronicIntifada.org. He will speak about his association with Barack Obama and his views on the Palestine-Israel issue. That's January 27th here at the People Speak Radio. Thank you all very much for being with us tonight. It has been a distinct honor and a privilege, and I am a proud Palestinian American that is just thrilled to have been able to speak to all three of you. Good luck in your lives, and we will keep in touch with you, and I hope to have you back again soon.
Thank you.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of fast as summer people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.
If your body isn't feeling too well these days, you're gonna start taking this hemp, I say. Go to hempusa.org. You may not like what I'm about to say, but you know I'm gonna say it anyway. The government doesn't want the best for you. They keep you down, they keep you blue. They starve your body for all its nutrients. They won't let you grow industrial hemp. It really doesn't make any kind of sense when it's so healthy for the world and useful for you, my friends. I hope Mr. Bush will hear this song, for the heart of America wants this one. Go to hempusa.org. If you're a truther, an anarchist, or renegade, you only want things that God has made. Go to hempusa.org. We offer free shipping anywhere in the States. Go to hempusa.org.